Dr. Wiestler, in which fields of research do you think the collaboration of these two institutes will be the most promising?
Well, there's a number of fields which we have explored, first of all, during our visit in Houston in November 2006, and now here in Heidelberg. Important fields include imaging and radio-oncology, of course, immunology. Neuro-oncology is a new important focus of our cooperation, but also areas in basic research, developmental biology, signaling pathways, which are important for cancer development, and this new area of systems biology. And then, of course, we want to join forces in translation. That is, in exciting projects where we move new findings from the laboratory into the clinic.
And of course, the most important goal is to unite resources and talent to advance cancer treatment. The MD Anderson Cancer Center is already the number one of cancer clinics in the United States. So what can you recommend from your long experience to the just recently founded first German comprehensive cancer center, the NCT? What is the secret of treating cancer patients in the best way?
Well, of course, the first thing is to have very talented and skilled doctors who are interested in research as well as patient care, because often the most important treatment is a research treatment. For about two-thirds of patients, standard therapy works, and that was research 10 years ago. But for one-third, the best therapy becomes research. And then I think the other secret that is so important at MD Anderson is the way we organize our patient care. It's organized around the patient rather than around the doctors. So the surgeon and the medical oncologist and the radiotherapist that's interested in breast cancer have their clinic together. And the surgeon and medical oncologist and radiotherapist that's interested in lung cancer have their clinic together. There's not a surgical clinic and a medical clinic. There's a lung clinic and a breast clinic. And that means the doctors are talking with each other about the care of the individual patients, and they can plan the research very actively together.
Dr. Wiestler, will it be possible to follow these recommendations?
I firmly believe it will be. And when we actually set up this comprehensive cancer center in Heidelberg together with clinical colleagues, MD Anderson was certainly one of the models. This idea of providing interdisciplinary care for every cancer patient is absolutely central and unfortunately underdeveloped in our country. I think this sister institution agreement will help us to learn from the experiences at MD Anderson, particularly for the Comprehensive Cancer Center.
Dr. Mendelsohn, you personally were very successful in the development of a totally new field of therapy, the antibody therapy. With Erbitux, I learned that you just recently received a prestigious prize for that. But all these new therapies are not only smart and provide individualized therapy, but also very expensive. If you think of antibodies or small molecules like Gleevec or heavy ion radiation therapy, and also the new possibilities of prevention, think of the new cancer vaccine against cervical cancer and the new possibilities in diagnostics like magnetic resonance imaging. So what will this mean for the future? Rich cancer patients will be cured and poor will still die?
Well, you set up a dichotomy that I hope we can avoid. First, let me say that the original work we did making an antibody against the EGF receptor, which is a tyrosine kinase, a signaling molecule, turned out to be a lucky but also probably a properly thought-out proposal with my colleague Gordon Sato when I was at University of California, San Diego. And half of the new drugs being developed today are against tyrosine kinases. They could be an antibody, but they can also be a small molecule. The cost of developing new therapies will go down for a number of reasons. One is that we will be doing smarter experiments. Today, if a new drug is developed, it's given to all the patients with cancer. And if only 10% are going to respond, the response rate is very low. Both Dr. Wiestler and I believe that in the future we're going to be studying the patient's tumor in the laboratory before we give the treatment, and we're going to be finding out what is the gene and molecule abnormality or a group of maybe three or four abnormalities that are particularly driving that patient's own tumor. And then we will be aiming therapies that have a high chance of working against those particular abnormalities in the genes and the molecules in that patient's tumor. And this is going to save a lot of the expense of these very large trials, which are the most expensive part of research. The science part of the research is much cheaper than the clinical trials part of the research. Then the other thing is it's going to take combinations to treat. And if we now have to deal with the intellectual property issues that are very strongly influencing research today, it's going to be slow. But if we can work a way out to share intellectual property, we'll be able to move faster. So if we do it more quickly and we do it more selectively, we will save money. But the other side of the coin is you're willing to pay probably 20,000, 30,000 euros for a car here, and it lasts for 5 years. And if it costs 20 or 30,000 euros to save your life, it's worth it. So our goal would be to have life-saving drugs available, and we will hope the prices stay down, but I hope they will also be thought to be worthwhile.
There are also sister institutions of your institute and now of ours in poorer states, like in Brazil, in Chile, in India, and in Korea, Mexico. So will they be able to afford all these new therapies or cancer vaccines which are invented by the new powerful Association of Sister Institutes?
I think in many of these developing countries, we first of all have to establish solid structures. There are countries in Africa where there is only one site where you can get radiation therapy. We know that from Tanzania, a country with which we have some interaction. So the first thing we have to do is we have to help these countries establish basic structures for standard oncology. Then we must help them to train young people, educate people, and increase the expertise. In the long run, I think in these countries, it will also be extremely important to establish tools for reducing risk factors and prevention. If you consider, for instance, that cervical cancer is the second most common cancer in women worldwide, the obvious way to go would be to vaccinate all children, at least females, girls in developing countries, to get rid of this plague within the next couple of decades. But this is, of course, a long way to go, an ambitious goal for international cancer research. And this is certainly one of the visions, which led MD Anderson to sort of establish this remarkable international network of institutions. If we can play a role in this and contribute, we will be happy to do so.
But you mentioned the vaccine against cervical cancer, and this is still very, very expensive. So what has to happen that poorer countries can afford new therapies?
Well, I think if there are really highly efficient drugs and vaccines, such as the papillomavirus vaccine, we have to make an international effort to make sure that poorer countries have access, either by putting pressure on those who market these drugs right now, or by developing alternatives. As a matter of fact, in our research program on infection and cancer, there's a number of groups, Lutz Gismans, for instance, involved in studies to develop cheap, inexpensive alternatives for the papillomavirus vaccine. I mean, this would, of course, also be an alternative to make this type of cancer prevention broadly available.
The partnership is meant not only to promote common research, but the two institutes are also planned to work together on education. What are your plans there?
Well, one of the ideas that comes to mind is what you were asking about earlier. I think it would be very wise if some of the young doctors that are going to be practicing in the multidisciplinary centers come and spend a year at MD Anderson. They are already fine cancer doctors, but part of the success of how we work there is the process and the interactions that go on, and the habit of the medicine doctor and the surgeon talking together before any therapy is begun. Even if the main treatment is going to be an operation first and then chemotherapy afterwards, they talk beforehand. And sometimes we give the chemotherapy first and shrink the tumor to make it easier for the surgeon to get it out when it is smaller. And these kind of things don't happen unless you work together. And then I think in the area of science, there is a graduate school here that has 300 or 400 students in it, and we have a graduate school with 300 or 400 students. Once we make our students aware of some of the fine scientists that are here, and I hope vice versa, the postgraduate training can be at the other institution. The best way to train your young faculty is to take your best students, send them away to see another way of looking at the world, and then bring them back.
Dr. Wiesler, we just learned today that the MD Anderson Cancer Center is very happy to get $60 million funding in every year. And this funding by private people has no tradition here in Germany. What can you learn from MD Anderson in this area?
Well, we hope we can learn. We must learn in this area. And this is indeed a remarkable difference between our two countries. This incredible sort of way how private people, dedicated personalities, support research in the US or in Israel. We don't have this culture or this tradition in our country so far, but we must develop it. Because if we want to be really competitive at an international level, particularly in translational and applied research, we must mobilize additional funds. And personally, I believe that this cannot all be given by the taxpayer. We are quite sort of generously funded by the federal government and by the state of Baden-Württemberg here at the German Cancer Research Center. We definitely must mobilize additional funds, and it is my hope indeed that we will also be able to sort of develop a successful system for sponsorship, philanthropy, and fundraising in this country. And as you know, we have taken steps at the Cancer Research Center during the last year to establish such a system.
Okay. Last question, Dr. Mendelsohn. Your vision is making cancer history. It's highly ambitious. Do you think this vision can become a reachable goal?
Our vision statement is making cancer history for every patient and for mankind. And a vision statement is the star that you hitch your wagon to. Today, cancer is the number two cause of death. And under the age of 85 now in the United States, it's the number one cause of death. The answer to your question is we're going to make tremendous gains. We'll never get rid of cancer. When your grandmother was your age, she worried about pneumonia and tuberculosis. Those were the two most common causes of death. Chemotherapy, which was invented in Germany 100 years ago by Paul Ehrlich, it's called antibiotics, but it's a form of chemotherapy, has had tremendous success against pneumonia and tuberculosis. They're not gone, but they're not the number one and number two killers anymore. I think the same thing will happen with cancer and heart disease, partly because of prevention and partly because of better treatments. When my grandchildren are my age, they're going to be worried about Alzheimer's and degenerative arthritis and other diseases, I hope. And cancer will still be a problem, but it isn't going to be the thing that is most feared. Today, if you do a poll in the United States, what do you fear the most? The answer usually is cancer. So we've got some work to do. But I'm very hopeful that we will move it down on that list.